Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends to doctors in women's health.
We're all here because of 3 billion years of successful sex, biologically speaking.
Right, of course.
Taboo topic.
Right. No, I mean, I think it's a really important issue to talk about. You know, many clinicians, including OBGYNs, don't recognize that sexual health and general health are very much intertwined. So it's not this esoteric emotional connection, which certainly is important, but there are a lot of physical attributes in terms of changes in hormones, improved sleep, improved immunity, and what have you, that are a result of sex and the sexual experience and being intimate with a partner. And I think many patients understand this aspect, that it's an important vital component. And when you speak with any group of patients, especially those who have had chronic medical conditions or on chronic medications, the impact on their intimacy is certainly very, very important. And we have been remiss. We have been neglecting this area of the human experience in terms of the medical aspect. And remember, not only is sexual medicine is really a new field in its infancy, really looking at veins, arteries, nerves, the biological, neurophysiological mechanisms by which we engage in sexual intimacy and our responses. So it's really a field in medicine that is really growing exponentially in terms of research. And, you know, we have to start at the grassroots. We have to start training our clinicians in medical school and residency to ask questions. And I think there are certainly barriers on both sides of the fence. Clinicians are concerned they're going to embarrass patients. They're concerned that they might be facing questions that they don't have answers to. There's time constraints, reimbursement issues, and patients as well really are apprehensive because they're not sure how their questions are going to be taken. They don't know if there's any information that is available for them as well.
And so as a starting point, what would you advise for how to approach this, and what can practicing OBGYNs do to further their education in this area?
Well, I think that it's really important to practice. If you're not comfortable with saying the words, say them out loud, write them down, practice. And I always say start from a level of comfort. So, if you are a menopause specialist, you can say many women in the menopause have sexual complaints. How about you? Normalizing statements. Many women who have endometriosis, many women who have fibroids, many women who are overweight have sexual concerns. How about you? So, and I think the clinician also needs to look at their forms that they have in their office. Are they asking the questions? Are they using the right vernacular, the right words that are inclusive to all different orientations and all different areas of expression of sexuality? And again, I think it's really important to broach the topic in a very calm, empathetic manner. The other side is for patients. I think that patients also need to break this conspiracy of silence as well. And what that means is, if you're uncomfortable, write the questions down, practice in a mirror, speak with a friend or someone you can confide in. And it's always okay to write down your questions and give them to the clinician or the allied healthcare providers and say, look, I'm concerned about this. It certainly takes courage to broach this topic, but I think it's a conspiracy of silence on both ends. Clinicians say, well, if sex was important for my patient, they would bring it up. So they're waiting. And then, you know, and the patient says, well, you know, I'm here for a laundry list of issues, my bleeding, my period, my PAP, my menopause, my breast cancer, what have you. And if sex was an important concept for my clinician, then they would bring up that topic as well. But again, it works on both sides, to practice, to get their areas of expertise, you know, really buffed and shined so they can really make patients comfortable in terms of talking about such a sensitive issue.
And a lot of attention is being paid right now or gearing up into the perimenopause period of women's lives. And this is a little bit off track of the questions that I sent to you, but you've piqued my curiosity by some of the things that you were saying. And it's interesting to me that some of the maladies that can occur, vaginal atrophy, things like that, within that perimenopausal and up to menopause period, can sex help with those things? And should patients be more aware of those types of things?
Well, you know, the perimenopause is often viewed as what I would say, you know, puberty in reverse. You have days where your hormones are doing wonderfully and providing enough nourishment and support for your tissues, and you have other days that you're in the menopause. And this is leading up to, you know, the menopausal transition. Your point is very well taken. There is certainly some data that has been published, which actually says, you know, sexual health and general health are very much intertwined. Okay. And what that means is you've got to use it or lose it. So the more you engage in sexual intimacy, the more you use your vaginal muscles, the more, the better that they may stay healthy. So there is some foundation for this concept that continued sexual activity improves the underlying tissues that support sexuality as well.
Great, thank you. And so in your practice, do you find that most patients want to talk about sexual health issues but are afraid to ask?
Well, understand, I run a sexual health center, so I'm a tertiary referral. So people are coming in primarily referred by somebody else, or they've sought me out on the internet. So by the time they find me as a clinician, they already know what my topics are going to be discussing. So they've already done their legwork. So, but still, we certainly see in a variety of different, I have a variety of different centers, and I deal with a lot of chronic medical conditions. I deal with cancer patients, and we talk about it in the guise of survivorship. So living with cancer. And very often patients will talk about hot flashes, they'll talk about pain, they'll talk about bone health, but they won't voluntarily, you know, admit to sexual health concerns. So very often the clinician has to engage the patient, even when they're coming in for a specific sexual health concern. I think the clinician needs to take the lead in terms of getting the information and directing care and therapy.
Great, thank you. And so I do, because we're doing a lot of coverage on it, we're making sure that we're very inclusive. And so we really want to be being sensitive to the LGBTQ plus patients' needs as well. What considerations should be made for this patient population?
So, you know, the thing that I think is very important is you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So be very consciously aware of the intake forms, the words you're using, and be inclusive. Include things like preferred gender, include preferred name, include a variety of options for when you're considering relationship status. Engage in having partners come in. Very often you can create a welcoming environment But with small things, little stickers to show you're inclusive, the proper vernacular wording that you're using, and be very careful, right? Because I think that's very, very important to understand, because, you know, certainly there are specific health needs given special patient populations. And again, understanding the community, making them feel welcome and not marginalized, I think is very, very important.
Thank you. That is really helpful. And so with the pandemic, I did want to talk about how much it's impacted so much of human life as we know it. And really, there has to be an impact to sexual health as well from this. Right. I wanted to get your expert opinion on what you believe that overall impact has been.
So you see it really a dichotomy. You see, you know, we've known that, you know, too much of a good thing is not a good thing. Couples that are spending a lot of time together, there's a lot of challenges, whether it's homeschooling, whether it's financial challenges, work challenges, balancing homeschooling with a variety of different things. There's much more stress in the relationship. And we certainly have seen a rise in domestic assault, domestic verbal abuse, and what have you. And again, this is a challenging time for everybody. As we also know that, you know, sexual activity has declined for a variety of different reasons for couples, not necessarily unexpected, given major stressors that are going on in family life. But again, some couples certainly are thriving, and it is really a delicate balance. So, you know, we do see some challenges because of the pandemic, but, you know, in general, the same rules apply. A healthy sexual relationship takes hard work. It's not something that should just be expected and a given. You need to work at a relationship on a constant basis. You need to nurture it. You need a break from it as well in order to provide space for your partner to come together. So it's been challenging times. But again, I think we need to look at the overarching big picture as well. And, you know, I'm optimistic that we'll get back on track as well.
Thank you. That's great information. And so we've been talking about this here within contemporary OBGYN because we've had some reports on it, but which is the negative side of sex, right? The STI increase in some areas, right? Because from our end, it's been seems like it's been more anecdotal. Syphilis, chlamydia, gonorrhea.
I think right now, I think people are in what I would label COVID fatigue. You know, people are frustrated, they're exhausted, being isolated, being distanced. It's not part of the human experience to be unconnected. So I think, you know, on some level, some patients, some people may be making up for lost time. They may have more partners. They may be, you know, thinking that they're safe because they're vaccinated. You know, in the grand scheme of things, some people are really perceiving that an STI isn't as bad as getting coronavirus. You know, so again, a lot of different factors, but, you know, for the change in STIs, really, it is probably an epidemiological issue, and there's a variety of different reasons, one of which may be the impact of the pandemic, and one may be the impact of boredom from the pandemic. We're all frustrated. We want some more excitement. Maybe we want a new partner. Maybe we're tired of playing it safe. Right? You know, you have to social distance and clean your food and wear a mask. And we're kind of tired of all these precautions. So we say, okay, we leave our, you know, STI information at home when we venture out into having more partners.
That's very interesting. And I, you know, we talk about, you know, access to the clinics, lack right. of access to clinics for being able, you know, to get right. drugs, anything like that.
Right.
We were talking about one of the, you know, worst STIs, the HIV, in which Ohio, by in a pocket in Ohio, in Indiana, and in West Virginia, they've seen increases. And in West Virginia, there are some policies changing on needle exchange.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think people, you know, access to condoms, access to healthcare has been a challenge. A lot of, you know, a lot of impact really on telehealth, you know, self-diagnosis of other things, you know. I think that's also very important. You make good points.
And so your perspective is really, really valued on that, and we really appreciate it. And so is there anything else that you would like to say for the kickoff of this consortium that you feel is important for folks to know about sexual health and wellness?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that the most important take-home message is sexual health is general health. And, you know, the stars don't always have to be aligned. Conditions don't always have to be exactly perfect for us to engage in intimate behavior. And there's far-reaching positive implications about being intimate with a partner, not only emotional connectedness, but also physical changes that happen with your hormones, et cetera. The other thing I would probably say is, it takes an effort, you know, to break the conspiracy of silence. So, clinicians need to fine tune their skills in terms of asking, trying to feel more comfortable with talking about sexual activity, and patients need to, recognize that there's healthcare professionals out there that want to help them. Good clinicians are never afraid of a second opinion. If sex is an important issue and you're not getting it addressed, there's resources available. And we have to work together, both the clinician and the patient, in order to achieve, you know, sexual wellness. So I think that's an important take-home message as well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Pap Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.